Technology. It's such a big part of our lives. It can be fun. It can be convenient, just like this podcast, which is why University of Missouri Healthcare is proud to support podcasting on KBIA. Technology can also save your life. That's why so many people turn to University of Missouri Healthcare. Its hospitals and clinics offer you the latest technology, plus a medical team whose skill and knowledge are unparalleled. You know technology makes everyday life a lot better. Well, it's true for your healthcare, too. University of Missouri Healthcare, the care you deserve from the team you trust.
Hello, and welcome to Under the Microscope, KBIA's weekly look into stories in science, health, and technology. I'm Raymond Tungakar. On this week's show, we'll hear about robots and farming. There's always work to be done on the farm, but often it's the same tasks day after day. Parts of a job could feel a bit like an assembly line. It'd be great if robots could just perform those tasks. That idea might not be so far off, as Jeremy Bernfeld explains in the second installment of the Harvest Public Media series, Farmer of the Future.
No, it's not a Kentucky Derby video game. It's a farm robot that could be used to plant seed or spread fertilizer. Only problem is it's just ankle high and about a foot long. It'd take an awful long time to plant a 5,000-acre farm.
It's building on what's currently there and looking towards what we would see happen in the future.
That's Joe Dvorak. He's a grad student at Kansas State University. Dvorak and his team built the robot, and he and another of his teammates showed it to me in a classroom at K-State in Manhattan. It's not hard to see how it could be used for farm work.
The whole idea behind them is very applicable. If we're doing it on a small scale, it just needs to be scaled up to work at a larger scale.
Sounds a bit crazy, right? Like a science fiction novel. Robots running around the field, growing our food.
Well, come on, Red, let's go!
In the Star Wars movies, moisture farmers use droids and robots on farms in a galaxy far, far away. But they've also got flying cars, so could we really see robots on the farm? Farmers today already rely heavily on advanced technology, like GPS systems, automatic dairy milkers, and satellite imaging. It's heady stuff.
Robotics and autonomy become appropriate where you have a situation which is dull, which is dirty, or which is dangerous.
That's Jeremy Brown, president of JBridge Robotics, a Massachusetts-based company that makes software that helps turn regular machinery into robotic machinery for commercial use. He says agriculture is a fruitful place for robotics. It's all thanks to sensors. They're continuously becoming more advanced, cheaper, and more rugged so they can be used in the field. Robotics is all about a machine reacting to the world around it. Farmers already have tractors that drive in super straight lines by themselves thanks to GPS auto-steer technology. Throw in sensors that allow it to back up, change gears when heading up or downhill, detect objects in the field, and you've got a robot harvesting your wheat. The robot tractor and robotic milking machines are the two main areas robotics are already being used in U.S. agriculture. And researchers are currently working on applications that could be used in planting, harvesting, weeding crops, and spreading fertilizer. Robots aren't yet common on farms, but it's headed that way.
There is one factor that will actually accelerate these kind of things.
That's Dr. Tom Zhang. He's a professor in agricultural and biological sciences at K-State and the robotics team's mentor. He says that in places like Japan, South Korea, and even China, a declining farm labor force is pushing robots into the mainstream faster. That may be a harbinger for U.S. farms.
Eventually, someday, we need to have a much more robotic automated machines so that farmers don't have to that many farmers to do the farming work. So that will happen eventually, but it's not going to happen very quickly.
Farms have huge labor and expense demands, but often only at two or three times a year, like planting and harvest. It's hard for a farmer to employ year-round the laborers he needs for the busy times. A robot able to do some of that work would surely help. Again, JBridge's Jeremy Brown.
The farmers actually have been quite enthusiastic in sort of seeing what this can do and how it can help them with sort of having predictable harvest times and to be able to do longer hours with fewer people if necessary.
Does this spell the end for the flesh and blood human farmer? Absolutely not. Today's modern farmer is the CEO of his or her farm, every day making important business decisions, using complex financial instruments, and managing a workforce. That won't change. Even Brown, the robotic software engineer, says his company isn't trying to replace farmers, only help them.
There's very much of a human element in all of the business decisions and all of the equipment selection and maintenance and fleet decisions. So, you know, I don't think... I don't think you're going to eliminate the farmer with automation.
With robots on the way, the role of the farmer may have to change to adapt to new tools. But they've done that for centuries. The farmer of the future isn't a robot. Even in our wildest imaginations, we still rely on farmers.
I mean, even if we look at Star Wars, Luke's aunt and uncle were human farmers. They had robot farm hands.
Robot farm hands of the future, though? It's rapidly changing from science fiction to science fact. Jeremy Bernfeld, Harvest Public Media.
Next Tuesday, if you look up at the sky, you just might see Venus cross the face of the sun. The occurrence, which is called a transit, isn't expected to take place again for another century. MU's Department of Physics and Astronomy will host a viewing of the transit on Tuesday at Laws Observatory. Angela Speck is an MU professor and director of the astronomy program. She'll be giving a talk as part of the event next week. I spoke to her about the transit of Venus, and she began by explaining what it was.
Transit of Venus is when Venus moves between the Earth and the Sun. But it doesn't happen with every time we go around. So if you think about we're moving around the sun and Venus is moving around the sun, we're not quite in the same plane. Actually, there's a little bit of a tilt between the orbit of the Earth and the orbit of Venus. And so the transit of Venus is not that common because we're only lined up every century or so.
What could people expect from the event on Tuesday?
So we will have an event at the Laws Observatory, which is the observatory on top of the physics building on the MU campus. And we will have we have a big telescope up in the dome, but we also have smaller telescopes and some solar telescopes that will be out on the roof. So there'll be multiple ways people can actually look at the event. The really important thing to remember is do not look at the sun. This was true whether you were viewing the eclipse a couple of weeks ago or whether you're looking at the transit of Venus. You absolutely should not look directly at the sun without protection. We will be open from a little before 5 o'clock on Tuesday because the event starts a little after 5. And we will be providing access to instruments. But also, if you've got good eyesight, you should just about be able to see this naked eye. It'll look like a tiny little spot on the sun moving across it. And then actually, after the sunset, I will be giving a talk on why the event is so rare, the details of the orbits, and also why it's really important historically.
Why has it been important historically?
The transit of Venus is a way in which you can actually measure how far away the sun is, how far away Venus is at that point, and then you know all the other measurements. And so it actually allows us then to start measuring distances out into space. And so up until the 18th century, we didn't know how far away the sun was, and it was the transit of Venus that allowed us to make that measurement. And so it's really historically very important.
And that's it for this week's Under the Microscope. Thanks for listening. Just a reminder that you can listen to this episode and others by visiting our website, kbia.org.